Blue Tiger Revenge, brought to you by
Norby. Warning, you are now entering.
Okay, hold on.
Blue Tiger Revenge, brought to you by
Norby. Warning, you are now entering the Blue Tiger 10, the intellectual dark web of comic book podcasting. Revenge is upon you.
Hit the music.
And we're back for a brand new episode. That's right. And this time, we're not wasting time with this and that. We're just going to get right to it. As you know, I am professional comic book artist Tag Galusha, and with me is the heart and soul, the king of beards, the one you love, the one I hate, the man, the myth, from the capital of Washington State.
That's right.
Brian Bales. How's it going, big Bri?
It's going good, man. How are you?
Doing really good. Would you like to introduce our guest who's already here?
He's already here. Yeah, I couldn't even tell you the last time we've had a guest on for the full Tiger experience, but we have writer, publisher, artist Lori Cunningham. How's it going? And also, how was the full Tiger experience for you?
It's going well. I feel like I've been the same thing as Ted, where I couldn't hear the music and couldn't hear the intro. But you guys are looking great, doing great.
Perfect.
Sounding great.
I'll take it.
We'll take it. Yeah. Yeah. We'll take it.
Take it. Yeah. That one of the debates we always have is like, should the intro be longer? Should we make it longer and just keep, because everyone makes their intros shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
And
we're like, we make ours progressively longer every year. Like, you know, I'm spitballing ideas right now on how to make it longer. We'll see what happens. We got to workshop it.
Enough about Blue Tiger, the podcast. Lori, you hooked up with us through a good friend, Steve Urena of Slowpoke's fame, the Killer Sloth, the Foul Mouth,
Zombie Date Night.
That's right. I always forget about Zombie Day and Night. First of all, welcome to the Tiger Den. And I've got so many questions because you sent us this project that you've been working on called Points of Villainy, three parts. And then also, I want to know about this. Are you the editor-in-chief of this company as well?
I am, yes.
It's called, what is it called, ASAP?
Yeah, ASAP Imagination.
That's awesome. That's awesome. How did that come about?
Yeah.
So my best friend Hades is the owner of ASAP Imagination. He is over in the UK, and we just met online in Twitter, back when Twitter was Twitter.
We still call it Twitter in the Tiger Den.
Yeah,
so
me too.
You're good.
Okay. I can't do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Every now and then I'm just like, X, X is going to give it to you. But yeah. So we just like met on Twitter. We were just like, actually like oddly enough joking about making friends as adults, kind of like just handcuffing yourself to someone and then like being like, we're friends now. And that was that was the start of a beautiful friendship. And when we started, he was a 9-to-5er and trying to make his own comic and submit it to some of the comic publishers. And I was pregnant and trying to just like, I was still trying to be a novelist at that time. Cause like into writing being like, New York Times bestseller. So like, I was kind of just like cheering him on. He's like, but I kind of like had switched into like short stories cause writing novels was hard.
Yeah.
So then I started to work on that and he's like, oh, we should do a project together. And then, but we were both still kind of doing our own thing. And then, I had a kid and then he was done with his job and he decided like, he was still submitting stuff and hadn't heard anything back. He's like, you know what? I'm just going to start my own comic book company, as one does. Super easy.
Simple. No problem.
Yeah,
super
easy. Very, very.
No big deal. But then I was like kind of in the like postpartum depression and still trying to write, and it like wasn't going well. And he's just like, let's like do this project we talked about. And I was just like, I'm like so overwhelmed with like life. I'm like, I don't know. And then by the end of the conversation, I'm like, okay, I have my first idea for the story, for a story. So it's like, so this was the original Points of Villainy, Points of Virtue. It was a prose anthology.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 16 stories, and we each wrote 8 and just kind of mashed them together. And it's this cool little flip book. So like one, like half of it is printed upside down. So the first 8 stories are kind of like a countdown to this mysterious event. And from there you flip it over and it's kind of like happy, quote unquote, happier endings.
Yeah.
Where it's like kind of like the event happens and then like, this is all that happens. And like people are essentially saved because there's like a paranormal, like cause to it. And then a paranormal reason that they're saved that are like different. So yeah, so that's kind of like where it started. And then that was supposed to be a one-off project for me, but like working together, we wrote our story separately and then came back together, and we needed to match the timeline for this like 24-48 hour event. Okay. And one of my stories didn't quite work the timeline. I'm like, so I had to like cut off the ending and like rewrite it. We brainstormed. Mm-hmm. And by the end of it, he was like, this is a comic book character. And I'm like, okay, cool. What does that mean to me? He's like, well, you should write a comic book. And I was like, absolutely. But hypothetically, like, what would that look like? And then started writing a comic book and then started doing like, Hades always does this thing where he's like, he'll like phone me up or text me. He's like, I have an idea. And I'm like, oh God, this could be a lot of work. And it's usually like this, it usually is, but it's usually like this are like really cool ideas. So like we started like an imprint because like we're publishing our own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then we started an imprint for other creators to, so we could help publish their stuff and they could keep their own IPs. And to launch that, we did this charity anthology, which is written again. And I basically was like, basically doing an editor-in-chief job. And by the end of that, he's like, do you want to be the editor-in-chief? And again, I was like, absolutely not. That sounds like a lot of work. And he's like, but you're doing it already. So
I'm guessing you were probably taking the submissions, reviewing them, vetting them, whether or not like, yes, well, we can publish this. No, we can't. And then coordinating with them to get them, you know, get all their work submitted, paid, everything else.
Yeah, basically. So thankfully we had some other people working on, like we had a cover artist come in and like basically donate a cover, and another editor came in and did like the heavy lifting, like the developmental, like full mm-hmm. edit. Whereas I was kind of just like the proofread at the end and the initial kind of read at the start.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a lot to coordinate, and it's like 16 people. And like most of them I didn't know, cause like, obviously like we were kind of small at the start. So if you like, and I'd kind of been in the online writing community for a while, so some people I know had like submitted and stuff. And I have a story in there too, but.
So was this all in the digital space? Was this all online, or was there like an actual brick and mortar like office in the UK someplace?
No, it's all online. Like,
oh, wow.
Hades just works out of his home. I work out of my home. And then we've like, since then we like, we have quite a few people contracted with us and working with us, and everyone's just scattered around the globe. So
that's so
like,
cool.
None of us were really cool. Like, there's a few coincidentals. We're like, oh, you work in like the next city as me, but like very few people have actually met.
Yeah.
Wow. Like in person.
And how long have you guys been doing this for?
We're coming up on year 4.
Awesome.
Wow. So like I've known Hades almost 5 years, and then the company's in its like third. Oh, and it'll have its 4th birthday is in August. And we have an online con we do, basically, I want to say every year, but like it's the 3rd year we'll be doing it, basically just to celebrate the birthday. And we kind of do panels and try to make it like a con, but like online. So
how is that? Is that pretty, is there a lot of people that are having to coordinate to make that happen? Because that sounds very hard to do.
There's a bit of work.
Yeah.
This is another one of those things where he's like, I have an idea. I'm like, oh God. thankfully, like there's kind of like the core of us, like, so there's Hades and me are kind of like the main people. And then our other two writers, there's George Medina out of New York and Nem or D.W. Howard out of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite. And then, like, so we, between the four of us, we kind of do things and host shows and find guests and all that stuff. And then we also, like, get other people to, like, host shows and ask. Like, there's other people who are, like, expert. Like, we have, like, someone we work with who we published his comic book. He's, like, a big indie film guy. So he, like, hosts, like, a film panel and stuff like that. And we've had, like, some of our artists we work with, they'll go on, like, Twitch or something and just do, like, a...
Yeah, that's what I was just going to ask, is how do you guys do it? Is it you guys do it through Twitch or YouTube or something like that? But so like go through Twitch?
It's mostly YouTube. So, but we try and mix it up a little bit. Like we do a little bit like Instagram Live and just kind of like to hit, we have different audiences everywhere. So try and make it accessible. Like YouTube's obviously pretty accessible, but we still trying to just mix it up.
Do you guys get a pretty good turnout for those?
Yeah, I think so. Like, again, it's kind of weird because like, so I don't like run. So like Nem's kind of like the tech guy. So he can like see all of this stuff.
Sure.
Like, I'm just like
you're like, I'm the talent. I'm rolling in. I'm doing my thing. I'm getting
He's
out.
He's the talent as well.
Yeah.
I'm the editor in chief. Yeah. I run the show. You know, just run it by me. You guys do the work.
He,
all right,
he
get
sends
it done.
Me color-coded M&Ms so I can.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect. But yeah, so like, I don't know exact numbers and stuff, but like we seem to have a pretty good turnout. Like this past one. So like, I've started like a online weekly drink and draw where I just like pick a prompt and kind of draw something every week. And then for the con, we did like a drink and draw and we had like a pretty good turnout. We actually like our two artists were from, we had one from Mexico and one from, I think she's Argentina. So it was like a very like Spanish. They brought like their Spanish audience and the whole chat's in Spanish. And like, and like the one artist is like speaks English, but like definitely more comfortable in Spanish. And that they're like just chatting with each other. And I'm going to be like, you guys just talk amongst yourselves. I'll just be here picking up like every like 30th word or something.
Yeah.
Barely.
So you're getting ready to do a Kickstarter for Points of Villainy, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I was just asked because I have the memory of a goldfish. But before we get into that, one of the things I wanted to add, I want to tap a little bit into this writing novels.
Yeah.
That's really, really interesting because we've come across quite a few creators who they started off as novelists or writing novels. And then it was almost like they made the transition because of circumstances or they just couldn't do exactly what they wanted to do in the novel. And it was easier to do it in like a comic format. Can we talk about that? Like how you got into, like what made you want to be a novelist?
Yeah. And, what's your origin, your origin story?
Yeah,
for sure. So basically like none of this was ever on my radar. Like when I was little, I wanted to be a cartoonist, but then like I went very academic route, ended up in accounting and stuff. But I had the chance with that to go over to Ghana. And while I was there, I set up a travel blog, like not as a travel blogger or anything like, but just to like connect with friends and family back home.
Yeah.
And when I came back, people were like, oh, like you're writing, your blog was fun. You're a good writer. I'm like, okay, cool. Back to my accounting job I go. But I wasn't really loving it. And my partner was just like, he's like, well, why don't you like just take some creative writing courses? And I was like,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, okay, that sounds fun. So I signed up for some continuing ed. And then one of the courses was publishing and promoting your work. And one of the assignments was to join Twitter and start an author platform. Which was like, I was very resistant to, but I did it. Got to get those grades, right? So like went on there. And then once you start telling people you're an author, you're kind of like, damn, I should probably like write something, I guess. Like I'd done stuff for the classes, but yeah. And I think I was starting to lean that way. And then the first people I connected with was very much like the novel community. And I had an idea and it turned out I was really good at writing the first like 12,000 words. And I'm like, I don't know what happens in the middle of the story. And then I'd kind of lose steam. So at the time I was writing dark fantasy, but I really like connected with the horror community. If I'd spend the horror community in, which I guess is me now, but that's a great sense of humor that like is dark and I love it. So I just like kind of connected with them. And a lot, this like one guy was basically at a podcast and he's like, oh yeah, like we read short stories. And I kept trying to like submit, but there's all these like requirements that I kept like not fulfilling where it's like, oh, like the main character has to die, but I'm like, oh, but this story, this guy needs to die or whatever. So I kept writing short stories. And then that was still like my work. It kind of like left off. Like I still write short stories.
Sure.
And I still kind of like I have a newsletter where I'm like slowly writing a chapter of a novel at a time. And I'm very like delinquent on sending out my newsletter, but when I do, I send out another chapter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like I still dabble in it, but I very much like once I met Hades, like I just got, he just very corrupted me and just like, once you're in comics, it's hard to get out in like a good way.
Those damn funny books, they'll break your heart.
Basically. And then like once he like kind of suggested to like write a comic, like I was like pretty like it, like committed to it. But like him and Nem were basically like, they like set this little folder up for me and this like Laurie's comic homework. And it was like, read this, watch this, read this and all this stuff. And then like, one of the first things I like sat down seriously and that was like, sat down to read was Watchmen.
Yeah.
And okay. Like, I'd seen the movie when I was little, but didn't remember much about it. But then I like, like, I don't know when it came out.
2010?
But I was like
youngish. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, not little. Really? That's that late, yeah, huh? I like that you just pulled that out of nowhere.
2009, 2010, somewhere around there.
Brian.
Fine, I watched it in my, like, 20s or something.
Brian's he is the mind of the nerddom at this the House of Tiger.
Yeah.
He's got everything down. I can't remember anything. I'm like, yeah. That Bernie Wrightson book, whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah. People are just like, oh, people will mention actor and actress names to me, and I'm just like, I have no idea. I look them up, and I'm like, oh, yeah, them.
Yeah, I've spent way too much time on IMDb, so I know lots of useless information.
Okay, that's pretty cool,
so Watchmen, obviously one of the classics, right? What other books were they like, you got to read these? What were some of and what did you think of them?
I was trying to write my comic was called Sister Grimm, and it's like this like dark half reaper hybrid story. Yeah. So like
I'm looking at the cover right now. I'm looking at it right now.
It's like kind of dark fantasy and like obviously death related. So I was given like Constantine and Ghost Rider and
nice,
like, and just kind of some like dark, like some of the darker like Batman animated like Mask of Phantasm and Year One. Yeah. And
so a lot of like Marvel DC stuff.
Yeah, kind of like more mainstream and like Hellboy and stuff, like kind of more mainstream. And like, I'd seen a lot of the movies, but like not with like research mind on it. Like, the guy's just watching them for fun. And now all of a sudden, like, all right, studying, taking notes and stuff. Right. So, yeah. And I never like made it through their whole list.
Yeah.
Because at some point you just start writing. And then once you're in the indie community, you just start buying all the indie books.
Exactly. What are some indie books that you enjoy?
So obviously Steve's.
Yeah.
Like I seem to like be drawn to like kind of the quirky ones. Like one of my other favorite ones is Bigfoot Knows Karate, and it's kind of like just Bigfoot like.
I'm in.
What the title is.
<I'm> Yeah. <in. laughs>
And he like fights like Cthulhu and like all these like monsters and stuff. Okay. So it's like. It's like fun like that. And then like one of the first people we connected with, where I actually don't know if they're making comics anymore, like the main guy very much like it's like a well-known horror novelist now, kind of went the other way, there's this like Christmas horror thing that they had called Yule. It's like J-O-L, but like the J of the umlauts, I think it was Yule.
okay
kind of like Yule, but I always called it Joel. Yeah, stuff like that. And I'm trying to think of what other ones, but lots of the stuff I just like, it's just people you connect with, and I have like such a mishmash of stuff I've read and stuff I still need to read, and it's all over the place.
That's one of my favorite things about like going to like a convention or something, is you meet the artist or the writer and you kind of get to know their personality a little bit, and then you read their book and you can kind of see where it comes from, right? I enjoy that.
Sometimes it's always interesting though, like you'll meet like a comedy writer, right? Like they're just hilarious, and then you meet them and they're like a curmudgeon, and it's always just those are like, how did that happen? Like,
yeah,
like where is this bubbly person at? It's happened to me like two or three times where I met somebody who I thought, man, this guy's gonna be so much fun, and then you meet him like not fun at all.
I assume you said that to them too. You are not.
No, I just kind of did the like, yeah, all right, well, see you later. Big gulps, huh? See you later. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. That's cool. Is there anything that like, do you have any like Holy Grail, you know, like, was there any kind of turning point for you in terms of like book that you saw and you're like, I can do this. I can make comics like this. I'm going to make comics because I love this so much.
Yeah. So this was like, in hindsight, I want to go back and say like Calvin and Hobbes. Like that was okay. Always, like,
for sure.
Because I wasn't like, when I was little, I wasn't into like the Marvel and DC stuff, which kind of made me always like coming into this. I felt a bit of imposter syndrome, obviously, because I'm like, I don't know. Like, I know the cartoon, like the animated cartoons.
But yeah. Yeah.
Like the comics. Sure. But like, I always had like such a big respect for like Calvin and Hobbes and Farside. I still do. And that, but like Watchmen was that very moment where like, cause I like, is that, I think it's chapter two when Dr. Manhattan's telling his story and he's like basically telling his entire like life story at like multiple different timelines at once. I'm like, how would you even do this without like comics? So yeah. That was kind of the moment where I'm like, yeah, I want to like do this. This is sweet. So that was like my big turning point.
So did you go and visit like more of like Alan Moore's stuff, like V for Vendetta or the Swamp Thing sagas or anything like that? Did you venture down those roads? No, okay.
No, I should.
Especially if you like horror. If you like horror, I highly recommend the Swamp Thing saga.
Man.
Yeah, people have recommended things. Like I made the mistake of multiple times of being like, hey, like the world, what are your favorite comic books? And then it's just like, here's 500 recommendations.
Yeah.
Or I'll be like, what is your favorite comic book? Like just your best one. And they're like, here's 500 recommendations.
It's I could probably give you like a top 10 or 15. I don't think I could narrow it down to one.
Yeah. People don't do that.
Apparently. Yeah.
Which is fine. You get really great recommendations. But
Cretaceous by Tad Galusha. There's my number one.
Yeah. This.
Not to buy.
Wait, come on now.
I'm kidding.
It's all right.
That's a good plug.
That's what I'm here for.
It's terrible. That's so interesting. So you've got this publishing house that you guys have created. Like, it seems like it's just been like this natural progression, this like amalgamation of creatives that have kind of come together, and then your roles have just kind of like, it seemed like everybody kind of fit into like a natural rhythm with it. Am I off there or am I right? You think?
No, you're definitely right. Like we've basically like, as we've needed people yeah. have kind of fallen into place, and we have some people who've like come and gone.
Sure.
But like, even like Nem was kind of like outside of me and Hades, like Nem was like their first kind of recruit, and he like fixed our cover for us so we could like do like the whole wraparound for printing it. And then he like made a few videos, and then like, cool. And we're like, all of a sudden he's like writing comics, and like he still does like videos and stuff for us. And now like he has another like publishing company and stuff. And then like, again, like, so like George Medina, he's basically, so Hades just met him on a podcast and they just clicked. And now he like writes one of our titles, and everyone's just, it's all like very natural and like just who you happen to meet. And
are all the sales all generated? Is it all generated like online, Kickstarter, crowdfunding, all that kind of stuff?
So that's how it began. Like the anthology and Hades is too many S's. but it's like first, comic book. They were like kickstarted on the same thing, and then we haven't done a Kickstarter actually for 3 years. Like this is our first one.
Oh wow.
So we were just doing it like all self-funded, and we've been going to cons and like slowly getting into stores and stuff. Like as we start doing like distribution for other people and like novelists and stuff, like we have we're like in Waterstones in the UK, which is like Barnes and Noble essentially, and we're in Barnes starting to get into Barnes and Noble and Indigo here. And
That's amazing, because that's a really big step to do, like getting distribution, especially in being in like a mainstream storefront that, you know, like people are actually like foot traffic, because, you know, cons are always a grind, right? Because you're competing with 1,000 other publishers, and then Marvel or DC happens to show up and it's like, oh, great. You know, like, there goes all the sales, everybody. I mean, that's really amazing that you guys were able to get that distribution in place. Especially so quickly, because you said it's only been around. You guys have only been doing this for what, 4 years? You said,
I think we're about like 3.5. I think technically,
yeah.
Jesus, that's really.
Yeah, you guys are like working at like breakneck speed. That's impressive, like very impressive.
Yeah, it feels like it's a little breakneck. But like we're trying to we've slowed down in a few places because like when we first started we got a point where we were like releasing comics every month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're like the only one doing this. And then we're like, this is too fast. Where it's just like there's no need to like pump out all this like new issues and new titles and stuff. It's like we need to like focus on like getting what we have out there and stuff. So now we've like found a balance, and so we kind of like we're not doing it every month now. So like we like pulled that back, and now we're like, okay, let's make sure we can get our current stuff in stores, and then we can keep adding stuff. And
yeah,
but we're still now we're doing both, so we can still keep being like, oh, like because now when I go visit shops here, I'm just like, hey, we have a new issue of this, or like we have a new title. So it's cool that we can keep like providing because I know like I've definitely heard comic book owners talk about like one of the problems with indies is just like, oh yeah, like we'll buy your first issue and then they never like make another one, or like,
or it's like a year before number two drops, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I think that like with that, like we have a good track record of kind of like we're still bringing stuff out even though it's like a little bit slower and stuff. So
do you guys focus mostly on doing like graphic novels and like collections, like novellas and whatnot, or are you guys still doing like the floppies too on top of that?
So we're doing the floppies, and we've just like switched into graphic novel because basically, so we have 8 titles.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's like 5 of them. Wait, no, 5 of them are 4 issue arcs. So it's basically like, so like Points of Villainy, we like so because it's like adapted from the anthology, we basically took the villainy side and we're going to put it in a graphic novel. And then when we have all the floppies for the virtue done, then we're combining them into a novel. And I imagine we'll eventually take the 2 graphic novels and stick them together into like the full anthology as well.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's really
cool. Then we can have the flip book thing again. Yeah. So
I love that's that so flip unique. Book.
I've never heard that before. That's really cool.
It reminds me of like some of the stuff you used to see back in the 90s where the actual physical reading of the book was part of the interaction for the reader, you know, where now you don't really get stuff like that. It's very rare that you get layouts where you have to take the book and turn it sideways, let alone flip it upside down or read it in reverse. Yeah. Like it's really fresh. That's really unique. I imagine that sets you guys apart from some of the, I don't want to say competition, but it's just some of the other books on the shelf.
Yeah, well, like I think they're trying because like there's so, and especially with like COVID, like I think a lot of people are like, I'm gonna make comics. It's like, yeah. I'm stuck at home. What else should I do, right? So like, which is good, but it also does mean like there's quite a bit of competition, and I think that like as like people lose faith in DC and Marvel and all that stuff, and like manga comes in, like there's so much at play that there's a lot to compete with. So it is kind of like, yes, you want to tell good stories, but there is something to like finding something unique that pulls people in. Cause a Reaper hybrid isn't like necessarily like no one's ever thought of this before. I'm so original, right?
Right.
Like, people talk about every story has been written, but it's like, it's just how you bring it and what you bring.
Yeah.
What you bring to the voices and the storyline and stuff. So yeah, I think that like we try to do that. And I know like the very first issue of Points of Villainy, which will also be in the graphic novel, there's a QR code, hammer base, and you can scan it and it links to a downloadable song. That the idea is that you can like play the song and it's like puts you in the mood at the same time while you read the comic. Yeah. So
I was doing that before you came on. Yeah. I was doing that because I was like, man, they've got a song here in this book? So I clicked on, I did the QR code and was like, oh, this is cool. And it just set the atmosphere, like it set the tone for, you know, reading the panels. Is very cool. Very cool. Like you guys are doing like some really interesting stuff that like, that's one thing I like about like the indies, right? Is, you know, you have to do something. One, you don't have anybody going like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. Because like when you work for the bigger companies, right, everything comes down to, it all comes down to budgets. You know, it's all budgets. Yeah. Like every meeting I've ever had has always been like, well, we'd like to do that, but you know, we're looking at the numbers and now we can't do normal size. We can't do hardcover. We can't do this.
Yeah.
Scale the story back, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think it's so refreshing that it's like, oh, hey, here's a QR code to a soundtrack for what you're going to be reading. It's just great stuff. Dude, you know,
we got to do that for Operation Blue now.
I mean, yeah, if you want to, sure. Yeah. We're going to seal it. Sorry. Can we borrow that from you guys?
I don't think we're the first person. Again, we're not the first person. Like I've seen other people who that like have musical, they're typically like, I've seen it more with like comics that are very musical themed where they like,
yeah,
have like a, basically a record or playlist or something, but like they've created it, not just like a YouTube playlist or anything like that.
You're like dipping your toe for
this stuff.
Oh, sorry. I was. Yeah. You're like dipping your toe into like AR a little bit. Like you're bringing in some augmented reality into it by just creating this like this reading experience.
Getting the vibes right, as I call it.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Cool. Eventually, we'll get to bring back the scratch and sniff. And
yeah. Yeah. Hologram covers, everything. Yeah, the works. Yeah.
Bring it back. Bring it back.
Bring it all back. Yeah. I don't even know if people make scratch and sniffs anymore, but.
I don't know.
I mean, I think you know what your next pitch meeting is. With the company.
Yeah. So, we'll have to figure out how to do it ourselves.
Got this great like
mixing chemicals.
Listen.
I'll become a scent artist.
I'm about to blow your guys' mind right now.
Oh, no.
This next comic, scratch and sniff.
It's really important to do that.
Can you imagine? It's a horror comic that's scratch and sniff. So it's just everything just smells like iron. This is
just rotting corpses. Yeah. It's like the rookie puking in the corner. Ooh, what's that smelling?
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, all right.
I feel like we've explored all the business aspects.
Well, I have one more business aspect question.
So do I. Go ahead, Brian. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go for it.
Hey, so if let's say a creator wants to pitch an idea to you, do you guys take pitches? And if so, how would one be able to get in touch with you guys for that?
So all like if people are coming with pitches to us, it's all through the Any One World, and it's Any One World and like NE the number one world.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a submission page and you can look at like all the stuff that's up there. We like right now we lean more like science fiction, fantasy, horror, superhero. But people can come with us and people come with us with like scripts, people come to us with like completed comics, and we basically just look to see how we can help.
Cool.
So like, yeah. And even if like people come us with like a pitch, we can like work on the storyline and stuff. Like it's basically at any level of an idea. Like we're just trying to help.
Yeah. So. That's awesome. That's really cool. My next question would be, you mentioned conventions, and since you're such an international crew, what are some of the key, because we were talking before we started recording, you're in Calgary. I know there used to be the Calgary Fan Expo. Is like, do you guys look for like big cons to go to, or do you guys try and hit some of the smaller cons? What's kind of the strategy there?
Both. It's a little tricky because like, so I just recently, like I want to say I recently started it, but because like with COVID kind of delayed stuff.
Yeah.
So I did my very first one was in Edmonton, which was like the big, like the Edmonton Fan Expo, like so with okay. like a big one. And then I like what did the Calgary one the next year, but I've also tried to do some smaller things. Like I've done like a little like craft Christmas market. Like there's like a brewery here that is called Zero Issue, and they're like very comic themed. So like I went and did a signing there, and I've done signings at bookstore and like just random, just kind of, you just go there and see what works and like where you find people. And like, I think Christmas markets are good because people are looking for presents. So they're like looking to spend money. Whereas even sometimes at cons, like people aren't necessarily like looking to spend money.
Yeah.
They're kind of just they have experience.
The money cons and the cons that are there for you to take a vacation, not to make money, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like interesting because like the Christmas markets are actually like quite, or like I've only done one. I make it sound like I'm super experienced, but like I have like very little children. So like I can't go to like everything I want to, and also budget wise, like some things are going to be duds, and some things, even if they're like successful, they're like still like logistically, it's like, I'm quite like, you talk about the curmudgeons, like I'm not a curmudgeon, but I'm like quite introverted. So like to have to go to a con, and like the Calgary one is 4 days, you have to be on for 4 days. And I'm like,
it's the exhausting. Next
day, like Monday, I'm hungover. Like it feels like I just like want to like lie in bed.
And then the con, and if you get con crud, that's what we used to call it back, like early 2000s.
The sickness.
Yeah, and like I remember it was always like you do a big con and it was like, okay, that next week it's like get ready, you're probably going to be sick. You're probably going to be just exhausted. So like have a few days just ready, like, and like a lot of companies, they would already be like, yeah, we're not going to hear from you for the next 3 or 4 days. So have fun sleeping on the couch, watching TV. Yeah.
They're a lot of work and like logistically. So like for me, like I'm very much things that are driving distance and like 3 hours is kind of where I've gone. Whereas like Hades in the UK, like everything's like so much closer and there's like cons in all these big cities. So he like hops on a train for 2 hours and there's like a massive con and then hops in a different direction for another 3 hours and there. Another con that way. So like he's able to kind of like hit more because I just like the thought of having to like figure out like planes or like driving through the Rockies in like January with I'm like I don't know, is this worth it? Like it's just like logistically it's just tough. So like I've kind of just been looking for like kind of more smaller creative random things that I think again, you just have to think outside the box because, like, I've heard people say, especially in the U.S., I've heard people say there's, like, tons of small cons, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah, here, like...
It doesn't seem like there's a ton.
One of the things that, like, I've started going to is, like, festivals, and they'll be hosted, they'll be funded by, like, the city. So they'll, like, I go, like, this year I'm going to the Boise Comics and Arts Festival, and... I mean, they bring in people from like all over the world and you'll have like Marvel guys, like big name dudes, but then you'll have somebody that's doing some like weird little romance mini comic out in, you know, like Argentina or something. And they'll bring them in. It's really cool. And because it's all like, you know, funded by the city, like they treat you like, you know, they treat you pretty nice. They put you up in a nice hotel. And, and like,
yes, I've yet to experience that.
I mean, I've only got to do it a couple times, but it was one of those where like, you look at it and you go, oh, more cities should be doing this because the only reason why they're able to do that is it generates so much revenue for the city of Boise that like the city's like, yeah, man, like it brings in people from all over. And it's one of those, like I've talked to people like that work, you know, for different state government things, like, hey, have you guys thought about doing that? And they always love the idea, but I think it's one of those you have to have somebody who's, you know, like really, really they want to have a festival happen in their city. And like Boise has a guy that like he's the main man. He created this whole thing for it. And it's really wonderful. But
I actually want to go talk to him because I want to do something like that here.
I mean, especially in Olympia, the capital, you probably could.
Like, oh, for sure.
I'll send you his information. Cool. I wasn't talking to you, Bri.
God. Wow. I thought you were going
to our guests. Cause like, yeah, they're always looking to like highlight like indie publishing houses and stuff like that. So anything that's like, especially such a rich community that you guys are fostering. I think they would probably be really fired up for that.
Yeah, cool.
My other question is there a lot of comic shops in Calgary? Is there like a comic book scene? I've never been.
There are quite a few.
Really?
Like, again, like I haven't been to a ton. Like, so it's one of those things where like, until I started doing this, I'd never literally been in a comic shop before.
Oh, wow.
and same thing where it's just like, I'd never actually been to the Calgary Expo. Like I went and like worked Edmonton Expo. That was my first time. Actually, no, I'd been a guest at Calgary. But like in order to prepare for that, I'm like, I should probably go to the Calgary Expo and see what the heck this is. What it's all about. But yeah, there's quite a few. Like I feel like small children and like winter. Naps, dealing with all that stuff and getting out of the house, it's like so much work. I'm like, I'd rather not. Like even just getting groceries is like it's like a big endeavor. But yeah, like there's like 12 or something. And then then there's like cities like in the like outskirts and stuff that I can drive to as well. And,
and they have little shops that sell.
That's awesome.
That doesn't include like there's hobby shops and then obviously bookstores, which they which lean more graphic novel and stuff. But there's still like lots of places to visit.
Yeah, because I'm up here in Anchorage and like that's by far, you know, like that's our big metropolis for Alaska. And we have one comic shop, like just one.
Yeah. No competition. That guy's running a monopoly.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And there's
just
a couple
$30 like, comics.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and there's a couple little bookstores that they have really nice, they've got growing graphic novel sections. It seems like they just keep getting bigger and bigger. But like, it's just, it's small, it's slim pickings up here. Like, you don't, I mean, we just don't have the population. There's just not a lot of people up here, you know? But I think that's great. That's awesome. Cause I knew that like BC, like over in Vancouver, that they had like, you know, there's all the animation studios and stuff. And we've had a few people on the podcast from there. And so like, I knew that there was a huge art scene there, but it's kind of cool to sound that, that there's, you know, a pretty decent art scene there in Calgary. That's neat to hear. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, then like we got Todd McFarlane's from here.
That's right.
There's
oh, really? Oh, wow.
I don't know. I think it's a same thing. It's a girl. The one who writes draws. I don't know. This is my vast knowledge. But like Saga. Someone who does who is involved with Saga is from here. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know she was from. That's cool. That's awesome.
Fiona Staples from Calgary. That's cool.
I think so.
That's cool.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Again, I like that you're just like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like I said, like, too much time on the internet.
Yeah. So let's change gears a little bit because I feel like we've been talking about how you got into comics,
you know,
the network that you guys have created and all this cool stuff. But I want to hear about your project here. I want to hear about Points of Villainy.
Yeah.
Like you sent us the first three volumes. Is that it? Is that the cutoff? Is it just these three volumes of this anthology, and then you guys are consolidating it, or can we expect more volumes to be coming down the pipe?
So the complete Points of Villainy is the three issues of Villainy, and then obviously we're like fancying it up and adding the bonus material and stuff to make it into the graphic novels. So it's got like a new cover and all that stuff, and then. We have the first issue of Points of Virtue is out, and then the second one is in pre-order, and then there's going to be three of that. So that's going to be the one that's coming. But basically, as all of our like main titles hit, like issue four, we're going to put them into a trade, I guess.
Cool. And
make them available. And they're all like the complete Points of Villainy is basically in the whole universe because all of the stories are interconnected, or the titles. But you can read them just separately. Like they all reference this event, but it doesn't, and you don't necessarily need to know what exactly the event is.
It's characters within this universe, and you're just a day in the life with them, essentially.
Yeah, because basically, so like Points of Villainy and Points of Virtue, it's like this, like, Points of Villainy, it follows six people just experiencing the event. They're just ordinary people. And so it's kind of like their perspective. And as you read more stories, you get a better idea of what the event might be. Mm-hmm. And then, so same thing for like the titles that like, so Sister Grimm is basically like follows a character who like, same thing, was a regular person and then ended up with these like abilities from the event just because there's like this paranormal element to it. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love, each story is a very, very contrasting different approach, like art style. Like you guys took an artist, like none of the artists are similar in any shape or form. It's kind of wonderful. That's one of those beautiful things about anthologies, right? Is that like each story is standalone, is its own thing, but then combined it creates this wonderful like jambalaya of creativity. How did you guys go about that? Was that something that you guys purposely were trying to do, or did that just kind of naturally manifest?
It kind of naturally. The one artist who kind of like was the first, so like a lot of our artists are from Argentina. Basically one of the first people we connected with, we were just like, he's the artist on our title OPSEC. And then we're like, hey, do you know like any other artists? And he's like, I know all these people. connected us with all of them. And like through that, we basically like, as people's styles came in, we're like, cause like we were working with a whole bunch of people before we started adapting the novel into comics. And so like, we were able to kind of be like, hey, I think this person would be really good for this one. And this person would be really good for this one. And like, we also like kind of like, we're almost using the anthology to kind of test because we didn't have enough titles for like all of the stories. So like some of them were kind of like, yeah, like I guess we need an artist for this one and your style looks like it'll match. So it just was very like organic. We weren't like going out looking for people necessarily, but it's kind of just like, you'd be good for this story. And they were.
So does the novel serve as like the keystone or the linchpin in this overall like universe? Like do readers, do they need to read that novel, or can they just pick up the anthology and just jump right in? No.
So the anthology is 16 stories. Like when we have the like two graphic novels, we took 12 stories. So if you wanted to go get a little bit more detail or read some more stories, you could go find that anthology. And it's just cool again, cause it's a flip book and it's pretty, it's like a work of art. But yeah, you can definitely just pick it up at the comics. And again, like if people like chronologically, Points of Villainy, like issue one would be where you'd start. Whereas Sister Grimm happens 3 months after, Hole is one of her it's like a one-shot issue for our ASAP solos. It happens like basically right after the event. And then OPSEC and Messiah are, and Dead of Night are closer to like around a year after the event. So
okay.
It's like, you can just pick them all up. But like I said, they all reference the event, but like you don't necessarily need to know you just need to know something happened to people and like, now there's a story that's come up, and then you can just follow that person's story. And then they kind of like every story kind of like is explaining.
Wow.
What's going on.
That's cool. So it almost sounds like you can pick up anything from the ASAP catalog. And that's almost serves as like a gateway into this universe that you guys are building.
Yeah, for sure. Like they're all loosely interconnected and tied to this event, but you don't even need to necessarily know what the event is to follow the stories. Like it's basically like, yeah, the event happened, and then like here's like panel one, and then from forward you can like follow the story and like figure out what's going on. So, but it is like you can get as immersed as you want, or stick to one title if you're only into like certain stories and stuff. And we kind of mix it because like Sister Grimm's like dark fantasy horror, and like OPSEC is kind of more like, has like an X-Files kind of that kind of element. And then Messiah's like almost has more of like a mob organization with some Irish mythology thrown in it. So like there's a whole bunch of different stuff. Like Hole is occult. So like same with Person is like dealing with like a demon who's hiding on Earth in like a human body, and Hell's trying to find him. So basically like whatever you want. Like, and I get like you can read them all, but like also get like not everyone, like some people are like, I'm only into sci-fi and I don't read anything else.
Right.
It's up, like you can find your place in.
I like that though, because then you can kind of, you know, different genres, same universe. They could be like, I want to learn more, but I've never really been into horror comics before, but I want to know more about this character. So then you're potentially introducing people to horror comics, and then they're going to find a whole new genre that they might love. I really like that.
Yeah. Like I've always like, I know like, again, in the novel world, people are like, oh, like you should stick to one genre, cause then you're like, fans can find you. And I'm like, I just write whatever I want.
Yeah.
Less I checked, Stephen King wrote Green Mile. So I think,
If
you have an inkling to get a story out there, then like do it. Like I hate that whole like stick to your lane type thing. Like I don't know. It's so
gatekeeper.
It's very gatekeeper. It's like the opposite of what it means to be an artist. Like I feel like I don't know about you, but I always try and look for things that challenge me. Like I did a YA urban fantasy a year and a half ago. That is not something that is in my wheelhouse or even like my interest. But I came across my desk and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this. This will be an awesome challenge. And it was, you know, because I'm used to doing more like, I guess, adult themed horror and monsters and sci-fi type stuff, not like slice of life. But hey, we got to keep it like PG, you know, like tone everything down. So now that I think that's cool. I think it's cool. And also like it sets you guys up where like if you guys want to do like a greater event.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like some big event with all these characters crossing over, you know, it sets you up to do that, you know? That's cool.
For sure.
That's really cool. Well, you know, I think it's time, Brian.
Is it time?
It's time. She has no idea what's coming.
She doesn't. That's true.
No.
That's true.
Wait.
Remind me one more time. What is it? What are we doing here?
He does this to me every single time. I go, Brian, I think it's time. And then he plays like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. And we're how many episodes in? I mean, how long we've been doing this?
Come on, 2018. Now. Yeah. So a minute.
Yeah.
Okay. It's been a hot minute. Okay. Yeah. So this is the portion that we call the question. I can, you know what, if it would help, let me do, let's see.
Oh God, are you using the soundboard?
Here I am using the soundboard. The question. There you go. So the question is something that we ask every guest that enters into the Tiger Den. And that question is, if you were given the opportunity to do a comic series of any licensed property out here, out there, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a comic character, like a Batman or a Superman, but if it is, sweet. It could be like a TV show you loved, a movie, a book, whatever. What would you want to do?
Oh man, that's tough. I feel like, cause it's funny. Cause like, I'm so in the indie world that like, people are like, oh, like I feel like people have asked me that before. I'm like, I don't have any interest in writing other stuff. Just trying to think of whatever like bands.
Yeah.
It could be anything.
It could be anything.
Doesn't have to be like a comic book related.
Yeah, it's, I know. When it's funny because like it is comic book related, but it's like, and I think that it's not like a good idea. Like, you know, when people touch something that's like complete and you're like, don't touch it. But like, I was such a Buffy fan when I was like younger.
Me too.
And I would like, I would love to like I just like get full immersed. Like I'm not like a fan or a collector of anything, but that's like the one thing where like, if people ask me questions, but like, I could actually like talk about it semi-knowledgeably.
Okay.
So like, that one would be like kind of fun to write, but I also feel like I would hate to touch it because like, it has that nostalgia and yeah. It's like, it's kind of like that remaking or like bringing back something that you're like, no, this was done, it's perfect, don't touch it.
All right.
did you read any of the Buffy comics?
I own, so like, no, but like, oh. Weirdly enough, so like James Marsters, like, he was at the Edmonton Con, and my partner's like bucking me all up. He's like, you go talk to him, I'd like blush. I'm like, he's like, go talk to him. That's like, and I did. And but like, in order to go talk to him, my partner like scoured all of the Edmonton Expo and found this like basically a Buffy like grab bag. And so I got him to sign a Spike comic.
I've heard he's
but
very
I haven't
nice.
Read any of them. Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
So, let me ask now sound that I know you're a Buffy fan. I got to ask you the real question. Spike or Angel?
Oh, Spike.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Always Spike.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Are you a David Boreanaz fan?
I am actually, but
I've started watching like very like slowly. Like I never watched Angel because I actually didn't.
Oh, you never like, oh, Angel's great. Angel is great.
Yeah. So that might, maybe that'll like sway me a bit more.
Yeah.
And like, I know like as an adult, a lot of people like Spike was kind of problematic. And I'm just like, but my teenage self was like, I don't give a shit. Like,
that's right. That's right.
I love that too though. Yeah. No, I love it. There's I really like Angel a lot. I actually have the complete series of Angel, but yeah, okay. big Buffy guy here too.
So now I have a question for both of you. What do you guys think of the movie? Cause like I didn't watch the show.
Oh, movie's hilarious!
I loved the movie as a kid.
So I've never seen it.
What?
I don't know why. And I'm like, and I know that I need to, and I for some reason I just like.
It's great.
It's kind of.
It's completely it's different. It's completely different than the show because the movie is like a straight up comedy, right? And
yeah, and it doesn't have the same actors or anything. It's like its own animal.
Yeah.
But yeah, you should watch it. It's fun. It's actually a lot of fun.
Did you do the so they had the Slayers Audible production that had James Marsters in it? So the audiobook production, it was written by Amber Benson, who plays Tara on the show. Did you listen to that?
No, I'm aware. Again, I'm aware of it.
It's like 8 hours long, but it's...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, it's an audiobook, dude, but it's okay. It's fantastic. No, it's got Charisma Carpenter, James Marsters. Yeah, it's very, very good. Yeah, Highly suggest it.
I just picture you now sitting in the dark like, I'm putting it on. No one disturb me for the next 8.5 hours.
It was actually, so the reason I know about it is like, so when I was doing the last Edmonton Expo, that was during all the strike and they weren't allowed to, like all the guests weren't allowed to talk about any of their stuff that was like part of the strike, but the Audible book or the audiobook was like the one thing, and his band. So he talked a lot about his band and like the audiobook and cooking.
I actually have the Mondo record, the Mondo vinyl of the musical episode. I got it sitting behind me.
Yeah. That's like the one episode I use as like people. Cause like most, it's the only episode I can actually think of where I'm like, I actually really like the musical episode. Cause like so many shows it's like they do it when they're out of ideas. It's just like a fallback where you're like, I don't know, a musical episode. Whereas like this one, it was like clever, like it made sense. Yeah. And like, I assume their voices were enhanced a little, but
probably,
but
it was very good. It's
catchy.
Yeah. I am a big fan of that. And it's one of those shows that I haven't watched in probably, God, at least probably 10 years. I think it's more a fear than anything else. Cause I don't want to watch it and be like, oh, it doesn't hold up, you know, but cause it holds up in my mind, you know what I mean? In my head, it holds up forever.
I think I started I watched it like since when I very first watched it. I watched the whole thing through once, and then I started watching it again, like just randomly. And then I kind of stopped. So like, why am I watching this again? But like, I remember the first season is like, it's very like they're all wearing like the monster costumes and stuff. And so it's like, it's definitely a little like cheesier.
Oh yeah.
But like, it's also kind of cool. Cause like all the episodes are almost more like standalones. Like it's like, they're each like unique.
It's monster of the week.
Eventually it starts to get more like, every season's like a cohesive, like bad guy storyline that they're kind
of, if you want to see a grown man cry, it's in the first season of Angel. I don't know if you've watched it yet, but where his heart starts working again and he becomes human, and Buffy and Buffy. Sorry, it came out in 1999. Okay,
spoilers, Brian. Way to go!
How dare you? And spoil Buffy shows up.
Oh, you know what? I won't spoil the ending for you, but I cry like a baby every time I watch it. So.
I cry for like everything now.
Watch that episode and then message me afterwards and tell me if you cried after it.
I'll just be sobbing. Ryan. Yeah.
Okay. I do have a question. As a Canadian, are you a fan of Letterkenny or Trailer Park Boys or both?
For some reason, I couldn't get into Letterkenny. Like, I've heard people say
it's a little cheesy, right? Like, it's just a little.
I got way more into Trailer Park Boys. Just, I don't know, because it was funny. But like, so not saying that Letterkenny isn't, but then like Trailer Park Boys kind of, it got like almost too big for itself. And like the kind it attracts like a weird.
Well, yeah, definitely.
I hate Dashing fans, but it has like a bit of a strange fan base. When I've seen them at cons, like the kind of people who are going up and talking, I'm like, okay.
Dude, they came to, I was working in Portland, Oregon, and they were just right when they were going through their deal where whatever they originally filmed before they were with Netflix, right? And they couldn't get the rights to Trailer Park. So they were like, we're going to start our own company. It's like SwearNet. And they released a movie called, I think it was just called SwearNet, the movie. And they were doing this national tour, and they came and did an advanced screening, and they were like, they weren't Ricky, Julian, and Bubbles and Randy. They were just like, hey, we're the actors, you know, like, dude, we're launching this new thing. We want people to sign up for it. The rowdiest crowd I have ever, way worse than any mosh pit, anything. Some guy brought a brick of, I don't know what kind of drugs, but just like threw it at them. It was insane. There was a woman came, just took off all of her clothes and like tried to like proposition Bubbles, you know, right there in front of the whole crowd. It was one of the most insane events ever. And you could see them. They were all just like, get us out of here. And then a few hours later, I ran into them on the street. They were supposed to do a meet and greet in the back of the building, and it was sold out. And they were escaping through one of the side doors, just loading up a van. I was walking by, and they're like, don't tell anybody. Please don't say any word. We got to get out of here. This place is crazy. But they were very nice guys. Like, very, very cool.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with them. I don't know. Like, once they kind of, I think it was spread out. Like, once they start having, like, that like, talk show radio thing that I'm like, I don't know. So it's getting...
Yeah.
Just like the Trailer Park storyline. Like everything else kind of got too big.
once it got to Netflix, I feel like it kind of lost a little bit of that special, that thing that made it so special, made it feel so real, you know?
Yeah. Well, it very much had like that real, like someone's just filming a reality show on like the old like 80s camcorder kind of vibe to it, where once it's on Netflix, they're like, oh, you're mainstream now.
Yeah.
Like because for a long time, they didn't even play it here in the States. I got really sick right when I got out of college. And so there was like a 3-month period where I was just basically in bed for the whole time. And I discovered them on YouTube and I was like, what is this? And my sister was in college. So she'd drive down on the weekends and we would watch the Trailer Park Boys on YouTube. And we're like, what is this TV show? This is insane. Like how is this not playing in the States? This is amazing. Yeah. So great. So great. Love it. All right. I just had to ask. I'm a big fan of Canada. I love a lot of Canadian things. Bret Hart, Trailer Park Boys, you know.
Fair enough.
You guys got some of the best.
Bret Hart is your favorite Canadian though, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. Come on now. I heart Canada, you know.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. Courtesy of my sister. Folks, you can't see it, but I'm wearing a shirt that says I, then it has Bret Hart's head, and then it says Canada. I heart Canada. I love it.
We'll throw it up on the Instagram at Blue Tiger Revenge. Give us a follow.
There we go. Nice plug.
Thank you.
Okay. If there was one thing, where do you want to go? Where do you want to, like, what do you want to do in the future? Is there something big that you're working towards? Because I feel like every guest we have on here, they're always working on something. You know, you got your project that you're promoting right now. But is there like that pie in the sky? There's that big dream. There's that graphic novel that's just waiting until your powers are at their full potential, like for you to do. Is there anything just waiting up there?
You know what? So when I was like writing novels, like I had that very much like the best selling thing, and I always had this thing where it's just like one of the reasons it took me so long, like. It didn't take me too long, I guess, in like the grand scheme of things, but I kept like not publishing anything because I'm like, oh, I like need to read this. I want to like watch these courses or like read these craft books and stuff. I'm not good enough yet to like put this out there. And then like with Hades, like once we put that anthology out, we kind of just got this mentality where it's just like, if you want to like do something, just do it. Yeah. So I kind of got to a point where like I've started to like draw more and I like definitely could do, I have many things to learn there. So I think that like, I'd like to draw more, but even with that, like last year, I'm just like, I'm going to draw my own comic. And then like, I found a way to do it through a mini comic and I'm like, and then I picked potatoes and I'm like, I could draw a potato.
Yeah.
So you just kind of like find things that like suit you and just like put things out. And like, I'm sure like in 10 years, I might look back and be like, oh, that's kind of garbage. But like,
oh,
I'm kind of just like doing things as I go. So like, yeah. I kind of have like more short-term goals as opposed to like big ones. Like, it'd be cool. Like I feel like there's the general ones like, oh, it'd be cool if someone like, I didn't know cosplayed my character. Like I've cosplayed my characters, but someone I didn't know did it. Or like getting invited to like cons in other countries would be cool. And like,
oh, right. Oh yeah.
Yeah. All expenses paid over to Japan.
That's when you know you've made it. That'd
be cool. But like, that's kind of like I don't have a ton of control over some of those things where it's just like, I have control over like, every week I can draw something or I can like write another story or something. So like, I think there's like a natural, again, it's just like a slow progression, but I don't know if I have like any huge, like the Moby Dick.
Magnum opus waiting in the shadows.
Yeah. I don't think so. Like I know like, but when I was writing novels at a few things where I'm like, I don't think I'm like skilled enough to write this, but I've kind of like fallen out of that where I'm like, I don't know if I need to write that anymore. Like now I'm doing other stuff. So. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you said that because I feel like that's one of the, especially with people that are just getting started. And like I've known creators that have been working for like a decade on a project and it's still just, you know, they keep reworking it or they keep putting the brakes because they don't think it's ready. And I think that's one of the most important things is to get over that hump of like, oh, you know, you just have to make it. Like you're right. You're probably going to look back on it later down the road and go like, Oh, that could be so much better. I do that with everything. Like weeks after I do something, I'm like, oh God, I can't believe someone.
That's a true statement. Yeah.
Or you'll like publish something and notice a mistake. Like even with so like Demon Potatoes, I was like drawing it live like on the channel. There's a few things, and I was like, and I didn't have like, I don't know how to like white things out because I'm just like would like have a wrong mark. And I'm like, well, I guess we're going to incorporate that into the picture now. Like, yeah. I don't know. Just like figure things out. And I think that's kind of just generally like part of that means that you'll make mistakes along the way. But like we've started, like we generally call them learning opportunities.
There you go. I like that.
And you try to make the least expensive learning opportunities you can.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's kind of just put stuff out there and it doesn't have to be perfect. Like there's no good enough, especially with creative endeavors, right? Like I don't want to be cliche, but like it is like a process and a journey. Like your styles can change, you can get better drawing people potatoes, you can get German potatoes, like anything. So it's just kind of like I think it's like important to like put stuff out there and like honor where you are at.
I think it's such a healthier mentality. Like I wish someone would have told me that when I was getting out of college, when I was finishing like school and stuff, because like that summer, I remember I was getting ready to do an internship and I did like a whole, I don't know, like novella. And I remember a bunch of students that I studied with were like, oh, you got to get this out. You should get it. You should pitch it. You should try and get it published. And, you know, then I took it to some other pros that I knew at the time and they were like, nah, man, that's not good. Like, don't put it out there. But I look back at it and I go like, I should have, because it wasn't for like 3 more years until I had something that actually came out and was like on the shelf somewhere where I had an opportunity. I probably could have gotten that published at the time. And I didn't because it was like, oh, it's not there. I'm not there where I need to be skill wise, but it's like, who gives a shit? It's like the story, the idea was there, you know?
Yeah. So, well, you can always go back and re-release it or theory if you want to. So like, but also I like to kind of talk about, cause like publishing seemed like this big, like insurmountable thing.
Sure.
And then like, once you get the book out there, like I have compared it to the 4 minute mile in the past. How like no one thought you could run a mile in 4 minutes. Right. And then it's like someone did it. And then like, after that, a whole bunch of people did it. It became something that was possible. And it's just kind of the same thing. We're like, oh, publishing feels impossible. And then you put a book out and you're like, yeah, I can do this. I can put up books. And then things seem easier and you get more and more stuff out there. Like you can still obviously easily get in your head and overwork things. And I'm not saying that there isn't the days of self-doubt and everything I write is shit. But
well, especially in comics, like the traditional method was like you get hired by one of the big five, right? So like I went to an institution that like that was what they preached is, and it wasn't bad. It's just like they were trying to prepare you for making a living in the industry. And so like the whole thing was like, if you can't get hired by those guys, then you're kind of shit out of luck a little bit.
For sure.
You know? Or you had to find other avenues working for like toy companies, like McFarland or something like that. You know, he was always hiring people. And so like a lot of us spent a lot of time. I watched a lot of guys fade into the ether trying to get like on Batman, on Superman, doing something at Marvel. And it just never happened when they probably should have just been putting their energy into like what you're saying, just getting these stories done, getting them out there, you know, whether they do something huge, whether they do something small, it doesn't matter as long as you're contributing something to the larger zeitgeist that is, you know, storytelling, you know, because that's what it's really at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, right? Like, it's all about just putting stories out there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I also think, because like, you may never like have an art style that's quote unquote good enough, but even if you do like have something exactly like what they're looking for, you need all those dominoes to like fall in place. Like, you need there to be a job opening, or like, you need
or just someone
like,
advocating for you.
You need to like know the right person who can get you in the job. Like, so much of unfortunately is just luck. So, it's very much just
it's being in the right place at the right time, being good, being, you know, having somebody who knows you. Like, it's those, like, those are the, you know, the magic things. And then, like, you know, I mean, how many times, Brian, have we had people on this podcast, they're like, they were just doing their own zines or doing their own independent comics. The right person saw it somewhere. And now all of a sudden they're working on like some monster like Dark Horse or something. Jimmy Moffood's one of those guys.
Yeah. Bob Quinn was drawing fan art of X-Men and posting it online, and now he's drawn X-Men for Marvel. So,
Kevin Eastman.
Yeah, Kevin Eastman. You know. Hello. Yeah, Ninja Turtles. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, no, that's cool. I love that. Like, I feel like in art, especially like on the commercial side of things, it can get too negative because there are these like, I don't want to say gatekeepers, but there are these like social gatekeepers in terms of like telling you that like you're not good enough, you're not going to make it. But the reality is, it's like it's so much easier to make it nowadays. Like you can do it, you know, like you can put stuff out there. You just have to just get something done and get it out there, you know, like you just have to jump in.
Yeah. You know? And like people, like I know people are like, oh, like what's your one piece of advice? It's like, just put anything out there. Cause like people will never see it if you never put it out there. Like, it's literally that, like you have to be willing to like get that criticism. Like even if you put it out there and everyone's like, this is garbage. Like, whatever. Someone might be like, I love it. Like, I know, like I'm in like a Facebook group for comic creators, and I'm like, people will share all of their stuff, and I'm like, look, I drew a potato.
That's
and
great.
Then you look at all their stuff that's like very like professionally colored and obviously like years of experience. I'm like, whatever. And then that's the thing that's cool about the community too, is like most people, I want to say, there's a few exceptions, but like most people are pretty welcoming. Like in the indie world. Like they're just like, they understand everyone's coming from different aspects and backgrounds and skill level, and just like people seem pretty helpful and receptive. So
yeah, it's all about just telling stories and you know, like creating a community, because there's not a lot of people that really like do like these, you know, like that tell stories, especially the comic stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, having the fact that like nowadays, you know, you can connect online and you can foster like a studio like you guys have done, like you got an actual publishing house, you know, like I mean it's amazing. Pretty amazing. Like 20 years ago, if you would have like half the things we're talking about, someone in an office would have been like, no, you're crazy, you could never do that. And now it's like, that's the norm, man. Yeah, like it's cool.
Yeah. Well, that was the intention with like our Anyone World, is like basically, because like I've done the self-publishing where I'm like, I did it all myself. Mm-hmm. it's so much work. Whereas like when you can come in and you can find people, and even like a little, even like if you haven't, like some of the people in our group, like they're in the Anyone World, like have podcasts themselves. So like, they're just like, if anyone wants to come on. So like, just have a whole bunch of people doing that, and like reviews, and like people cross promote, and like hooking up artists and videographers and stuff. So like, it's this great little like networking, people just kind of supporting each other. Like, again, we hadn't done a Kickstarter for like 3 years. So we're like leaning in that, talking to some people. And again, like we're like publishing for them, but like at the same time, we're like, hey, you're like, you know, Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can learn from you. Like we're not just like, oh, we're like, at the top, so like everything we say, like we know everything, but like we understand that like we know like other people are experts in different things.
So. Yeah, it's that you know, being that lifelong learner. I think that's one of the biggest things about being an artist is continually being open to learn. I you know, there's nothing more frustrating than when you see somebody where it's like they're doing the same thing they were doing 20 years ago. It might still be working, but you notice that it's like, it doesn't have the same kind of draw, because and those are the people that usually are a little cut off. You know what I mean? Like they achieved whatever they wanted and then they stopped learning, where I don't know. I'm always amazed by like these older artists. Like, I don't know, a couple of years ago, there was the book Monster that came out through Fantagraphics with Barry Windsor Smith.
Yeah.
And you know, like it was amazing to see a guy in his 80s that was still putting out like big prolific graphic novels that had something to say.
And that was a failed pitch for the Hulk that Marvel didn't want to do.
So, yeah, it was this rejected project from years ago, and he stuck with it and got it done, and it ended up winning all these Eisners, you know, like it ended up being massively celebrated. And even on the lead up to its release, you know, like I don't know how many people I had conversations with in the industry that were like,
he's washed, he can't do it.
I literally had somebody say he's washed. And I was like, are you really Barry Windsor Smith? You like horror, you should check it out. It's
very,
it's
very, very good. Yeah.
Very dark. Yeah. It's psychological horror. Like kind of probably what the Hulk should be. Like if you took the Saturday morning cartoon element out of the Hulk and then you focused on like what's going on mentally.
Yeah,
like,
the trauma.
Yeah. And like what that manifests in when you start bringing in like a government experiment gone not so great. And it's not really like an action. Exploration into, I guess, what would you perceive as like Bruce Banner's psyche. It's great. But
Add that to the list of 500 that you
got. Yeah, there you go.
That sounds like it has like more of like a Jekyll and Hyde kind of.
It does. It does. A little bit. Yeah, it's actually kind of like heartbreaking to read. Like, prepare yourself if you do journey into it. It's great. So we're starting to wind down.
Yep.
You know, we've talked about your publishing house. We've talked about points of villainy. I make sure I said that right. I kept wanting to say points of villainess, but I think it's because Brian and I are always talking about this movie called
The Villainess. Yes.
Yeah, which is very good. So I had a glance at the screen real quick. As we're winding down, we like to do this thing where we kind of check in and see what everybody's reading. So you're our guest for tonight. So what books are you reading right now to keep the juices fresh and flowing?
Oh, good. I like you said books. Books. It's not just,
It could be comics. Most of the time people have comics.
Plural. Yeah. Because feel like I don't just read one. So I started like reading The Walking Dead because people said it was great.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the, so I'm into volume 3 of that. There's this other book, novel, called The Book Eaters by Sunny something Dean, maybe. That's basically about these like human like species that like eat books and like absorb the knowledge, and they're like, it's supposed to be quite dark.
Okay. So
I'm looking forward to that. And then I just like picked up Do a Power Bomb.
Daniel Warren Johnson, yeah. Man. Yeah.
A whole bunch of people like that I knew like were like, this is an amazing story. And I like almost impulse bought it off Amazon, but I'm like, I'm gonna go to my local comic shop and hold up for a second.
Have you read any of his stuff before?
Highly recommend Murder Falcon. If you like Do a Power Bomb, check out Murder Falcon.
Murder Falcon will make you cry. Like it is.
Oh yeah.
Fair enough. It might be the best thing he's done. And I hope he doesn't take offense to that.
No, I don't think he would.
But it's pretty good. Like Do a Power Bomb was great, but Murder Falcon was next level. Like,
yeah.
Next level.
Yep.
Like it propelled him into that like cosmic level of superstardom that very few comic creators ever get to even like touch, let alone live in. He resides there permanently at this point.
He's not going anywhere from that space.
That's cool.
And my other one is Death Note. I'm pecking away through that.
Oh, how many volumes of Death Note are you into?
One. I've read one.
Okay. I only read like the first 3 years ago. But yeah. I it was like one of the first, like I'd only read a few manga, but that was one of those that there's a great comic artist named Dustin Weaver, and he was like, what, you gotta read Death Note, you gotta check it out. I thought Death Note was such an interesting story. It was so good. Good.
Well, I was like looking and like, because I wanted to like get into some manga or manga, whatever. And then I was like looking at things and like so many things. Like I found this like one article that was going through them all. Like it's like One Piece is awesome, but it's like 1,000 books.
Yeah.
So people are like Death Note was nice because it's like 13 like contained.
Yeah.
I don't have to like read 1,000 books. So let's figure it out.
Now you got me thinking. What would be a good recommendation for manga?
I have Junji Ito on my.
Oh, I was just gonna say Junji Ito. Anything from him since you like horror, he's the master. He did a really great comedic horror, like mini manga. I think it was only like maybe like 100 pages, if that. Yeah. But it was all about his cats, and in his house and his relationship with his cats, but from like this horrific perspective. It's hilarious. It's such a great, and he like portrays his wife as like a demon a little bit. And she only like the cats only like her, you know, like they do. great. It's very good. It's very good. That's cool. Yeah. What about you, Bri? What do you got?
You already know what I'm reading, man. The same thing I've read the last three episodes.
Right. Well, lay it on us. Lay it on us.
Oh, I'm still on Dragon Ball Z, man.
Okay.
So let's see. Where am I now? I'm not that much farther because even though the release are days apart, it's like a week apart. We just recorded what on Friday and it's Sunday. So yeah. I'm not that much further than I was the last episode with, you know, you're Goku,
Planet Namek.
Yeah. Goku racing to Planet Namek,
training
on the way there. Yeah. Lori, I recently got into Dragon Ball after, Kira Toriyama passed away. And so my 9-year-old and Tad are the two people I know who are obsessed with it.
It makes it sound like I have the taste of a 9-year-old. Like, yeah, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much. That's pretty much the conversation to get him to read it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Tad reads it. Oh,
on the last Drink and Dry, did what the artist, we had a guest, and the artist he came on, like one of his first stories was like very Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Inspired.
Nice.
You're not the only one. You're not the only 9-year-old adult.
I had zero interest in it until he died. And then, that sounds really shitty, but just seeing everybody, like the impact that he had on so many people, I was like, okay, I'm finally going to read it. And yeah, yeah. I've just been burning through it. I love it.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tad.
That's great. I'm so happy. So happy you're reading Dragon Ball.
I know.
Yeah. You know, shout out to Akira Toriyama, wherever you are in the ether of the universe. Like, hopefully
you made me a believer, sir.
Hopefully you finally get to rest. Rest from hitting those deadlines.
Yeah. What are you reading?
Well, speaking of Junji Ito, my sister-in-law from Boston, she sent me a surprise late birthday gift that, like, we normally don't do, like, the birthday exchanges and stuff, but this just showed up in the mail. But she sent me the Junji Ito's No Use Escaping Tomy, the entire collection. Like, it's this big, fat.
That's pretty,
like,
cool.
Yeah, I think it's, like, 1,000 pages. Yeah, it's about 800 pages. So I'm obviously not done with it. I'm maybe 100 pages in. But, again, it's just, you know, I try and read things that are very different. You know, like, well, Brian, you know, every time we come on here, I have something that's, I never have stuff that's the same. And I don't read enough, like, horror stuff. Most of the stuff I read is either, like, action adventure or occasional comedy or something like that. But, man, it makes me, like, and also, like, manga. I don't read enough manga. I feel like there's so much good storytelling.
Same, yeah.
That they're doing over there. They're just pumping so much good stuff out. And, you know, I always just get lost in the North American releases, you know, like the Image comic stuff. But yeah, it's so great. It's such a nice different change of pace. And, like, the one thing I find, I'm colorblind. So, like, reading full color production comics is always kind of frustrating because I can't. The atmosphere, the vibe of the panels never translate in print proper like they're supposed to for me, right? So I'm always seeing it through a lens. But with manga, it's always black and white, and so it's all about, like, the gray tones and the values. That works so much better for me as a reader. You know, in terms of the storytelling and just getting a feel. Like, I love, like, that's when you said Death Note. You know, that was one of the first, like, I'd say black and white comics where I was like, oh, man, this really resonates. This really translates really well. Like, I'm not going to go on and read the entire series. I didn't need to, but just those first few volumes, I was like, oh, man, this is great. This is cool. And that really kind of opened the door for me for manga again.
You know what my favorite black and white comic is?
Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. Hands down, man. Hands down.
Of course. And then I'm reading a novel by Edward Abbey right now called The Brave Cowboy. And I sometimes, especially doing the podcast, we always find, like, it puts me in that fix where I find myself reading too much like comics and graphic novels just because that's really what my life is these days.
Yeah.
And but lately I've been having to do a lot of writing. So, you know, like, one of the gigs I'm working on right now, like, I'm
writing the scripts for it too, like full on scripts for the company. And so I find that getting in that headspace where you're reading like just straight up words and how they're being portrayed on the page has been really helpful. And so Edward Abbey, I always loved his voice. He always had a great voice, just that, like, you know, cause he was that, rebellious voice against, I grew up in the woods. I'm a woodsy guy. So he's always been that rebellious voice from like the 70s that he saw that kind of like industrialism that was starting to work its way from the East Coast across the states, you know, the corporate America sort of thing, you know, the billboards, the advertisements. And so he was one of those guys that always was writing against that. And he just has these great fiction. I don't really care for his nonfiction too much, but I love his fictional stories where it's like these, I guess you could almost say like 70s, 60s nomads that are residing in the southwest regions of the United States, you know, down by the Grand Canyon, and they're going around and like burning billboards down, or, mm-hmm. You know, like Fire on the Mountain was one I read of his last year, and it was all about when the U.S. government was basically buying up ranchers' lands down in that region because they were doing all the atomic tests, and they also wanted to test, you know, like experimental aircraft and things like that. So they were buying just like thousands and thousands of acres. And so the story was about some old ranch guy who was like a, you know, World War II vet, and wasn't leaving, you know, like they're offering him top dollar and all that, and he wasn't going to leave. And it was all from the perspective of his son or his grandson that would come and visit and stay on the ranch with him. And he just happened to be like, dude, deadline's up. Like, you have to leave. We're seizing this land from you. And he wasn't moving. So of course, you know, chaos ensues. It's kind of funny too. Anyways, I always love that kind of stuff, but yeah. So,
I feel like we all have an author like that, right? That we follow their books, and anytime they got something new out, it's like, I'm ready.
Well, Edward Abbey's been dead since the 90s.
I know, but, that. Shut up.
But yeah, I haven't. It's one of those I'll discover that, oh yeah, he did this book. I never read it. And so I picked this one up just recently and just started cracking it. So I can't really tell you what it's about, but I can tell you that I'm starting to dig my heels in and ride that horse deep into whatever story.
I think you mean ride that tiger.
Ride that tiger deep into the pages of Edward Abbey's Brave Cowboy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. There you go. That's what I read. That's all I read.
Well, how about, you know, before I take us home, Lori, you got a Kickstarter. It's probably, by the time this episode's out, it's live. Tell us about your Kickstarter, what all it entails, where folks can find it, and, you know, give us everything.
All right. So launch is April 1st. So if depending when it is, it's probably live. So we have, like, obviously the digital editions, the physical editions ships anywhere in the world, because we're all over the world. So doesn't mean it's necessarily cheap to ship it everywhere in the world, but basically if you can afford it and you want to hold something in your hand, the option is available. But thankfully it's coming from, like, Canada's a terrible place to ship stuff from. So, like, Hades in the UK, it seems like he gets better deals for stuff. So thankfully he's doing that. we got like art prints, and we got like trading cards, and we got like some stretch goals. Like, you can eventually get yourself drawn into one of our future panels and stuff. Cool. So you got like some of like the fun stuff, but also like we don't have like a ton of the swag. Cause like, I think we really wanted to like push the story. We didn't to put a whole bunch of stuff into like the, like, we still have art prints and stuff for our characters, but we don't have Funko Pops or plushies or anything like that.
You guys are about the books.
Yeah, I love that. And I get, like, that has appeal, but, like, I'm not a big swag person. Like, when I get stickers, I'm like, cool, I'll put that in my sticker pile of in this drawer that I rarely open. Like, it's still cool to get that stuff, and we still have some bookmarks and the art prints and the trading cards, but, yeah. So, yeah, it's basically available, and then... it's featuring six different artists, and each story has its own different vibe, and it's all different kinds of horror, and they're all connected. And so, yeah, it's in an alternate London, which I think is kind of cool. So it's like you get to play in a different, like, a familiar but a different universe. So
that's great.